and then they go to a story, I think, with a little bit better understanding. So I'm a big proponent of what's going on with social networking from the disability community, because I think they've really harnessed it for good to kind of get their own stories out there. There was a Twitter discussion last week called, which the hashtag was just our disability stories. And I think it was great. You know, the Smithsonian was involved and a lot of the Disability Visibility Project was involved. And so there was just a lot of kind of focus on the real disability stories in America. And I think journalists probably got an education if they read any of those too about what the real story is, and hopefully story ideas for the future too.
Well, we'll end on that positive note. We've been speaking with Beth Haller of Towson University. Her book is Representing Disability in an Ableist World, Essays on Mass Media. Her blog is Media Dis and Dat. Thanks for joining us this week on Counterspin, Beth Haller.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
And that's it for Counterspin for this week. Counterspin is produced by FAIR, the National Media Watch Group based in New York. If you missed part of today's show or you'd like to hear previous shows, you can find them on our website. It's FAIR.org. The show is engineered by Alex Noyes. I'm Janine Jackson. Thanks for listening to Counterspin.
The time is 6 o'clock. You're listening to KBOO Portland. Up next, Bread and Roses, Feminist News and Public Affairs.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the 17th annual Pickathon, July 31st through August 2nd. Pickathon is 3 days and 7 stages of performances by a variety of bands such as Toon Yards, Shabazz Palaces, Ty Segall, Leon Bridges, Freakwater, and dozens more. Pickathon takes place at Pendarvis Farm in Happy Valley and features weekend or single-day tickets, as well as wooded camping, food trucks, and local beverages. A full list of artists, stage schedule, ticket prices, and transportation options can be found at KBOO.fm/pickathon2015.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Willamette River Revival Sunday, August 2nd from noon to 7 p.m. at Cathedral Park in North Portland. The Willamette River Revival is a community-based river festival to celebrate and reconnect with the lower Willamette River and its cleanup. The Grand Ronde Tribe will host a salmon bake. There will also be tabling by environmental groups, Native American crafts, live folk music, storytelling, and other activities. Again, that's the Willamette River Revival, Sunday, August 2nd, from noon to 7 p.m. at Cathedral Park in North Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Oregon Symphony. Presenting an evening with indie folk troubadour, Gregory Allen Isakov, Thursday, January 14th at the Arlene Schnitzer Concert Hall. Tickets and information for Gregory Allen Isakov with the Oregon Symphony are available at orsymphony.org.
At the dawn of the day, all the darkened kitchens, the mill of grain, all touched by the radiance that the sun discloses. Oh, hear the people singing bread and roses. Oh,
Welcome to Bread and Roses, Feminist News and Public Affairs. I'm your host this evening, Delphine Crescenzo. Bread and Roses is a collective of women-identified radio activists. We give voice to those working for social justice and equity globally and locally, and we strive to challenge systems of oppression. All of this, and we have lots of fun. And we always welcome new collective members, no experience necessary. You can find out more by contacting KBOO's volunteer coordinator. Her email is volunteer@kboo.org. Please like us on Facebook, KBOO Bread and Roses. You can get updates and see behind-the-scenes photos. And we are on Twitter at Bread Roses Radio. You can also find us on the web, kboo.fm/breadandroses. You can also there listen to past shows and leave us comments or suggestions. And also, if you have comments or suggestions, you can email us. Our email is breadandrosescollective@gmail.com. Tonight on Bread and Roses, we welcome the Cascade Abortion Support Collective, a new reproductive justice collective in Portland providing free, compassionate support to anyone experiencing abortion in the greater Portland area. The Cascades Abortion Support Collective offers a wide range of support, including emotional care, physical comfort, informational support, and transportation, as well as other logistical support for those experiencing abortion. The group explained that their services are motivated by their collective belief that all people deserve safe, supportive, abortion care, no matter what. So we are joined in the studio this evening by Ariel and Heather. They are abortion doulas with the collective, and we are going to talk with them about the motivation for forming the collective and the ways that they are hoping to impact their reproductive health in the Portland area. And you can learn more about their collective by visiting www.cascadesabortionsupport.org. Ariel and Heather, welcome to Bread and Roses.
Thank you so much.
It's such a pleasure to have you here. Let's start actually by talking about how the collective was created. What was the spark that make you come together?
Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much again for having us. We're so honored to be here on a show like Bread and Roses and at KBOO for our first.
This is your first.
Yeah, yes. This is our first public opportunity to tell Portlanders and those outside of Portland as well about our service. So it's really, really exciting to do that here at KBOO, at a community radio station, and on a show like Bread and Roses that positions itself, as you had said, for social justice and equity. It's just so great.
Well, thank you.
And thank you for that question. So, I think what sparked us coming together was a belief and a desire. So the belief, as you mentioned, for us was that all people deserve safe, supportive, and affirmative abortion care, no matter what. And that's a belief that all of us who are the founding members of the collective share. And then that's coupled with the desire to see that in our world, and the recognition also that that's not happening right now, that for so many, not only do they not have a baseline of the necessary support, but that, you know, they deserve even more, but that we're seeing such a lack. And so that belief and that desire together is what sparked myself and Meg to start doing the, you know, foundational organizing of putting the materials together to get together, and then opened it up. And we have a wonderful collective that has been meeting and working really hard to launch this service and to spread the word about it. And part of that is being here. So that's my answer for that. And Heather, maybe you want to speak a little bit to, you know, what brought you.
Yeah, so I was not one of the two founding lovely ladies who began this work, but pretty soon afterwards, they reached out to some different factions in the community looking for people to join, not only to provide the service, but to help get the foundation off of the ground. And I thought, what an incredible opportunity. You know, I work as a doula in many facets, not just abortion care, but birth and postpartum. And I always wanted to incorporate more of this work. And so having the logistical and sustainable support for me to do that work was a huge draw for me. Mm-hmm. So one, just being able to connect to the people who need the service. So it's not just the people in my immediate circle who know that I'm there for them, but other people as well can connect to myself and the other doulas part of this group. But also just sharing, having the truly the collective vibe, being able to share information and skills so the people we do support are getting high quality support. Being able to have some of that logistical support of, you know, backup or someone to call when you need to talk about this work. It's incredibly powerful work and often positive, but just like any deep work, it can take some support from your community. Mm-hmm. So I thought, what an amazing way to be able to do this work and make it sustainable as a part of a collective. So I was very excited about the opportunity to jump on board.
Mm-hmm. So how many of you guys are there, and how long did it take you from the budding of the idea in your head with Megan and till now?
Yeah, well, I will say the bud definitely didn't start with me, and that this this service has been provided from the beginning. Okay. It's a great question, but yeah, just to acknowledge that, you know, it is in maybe the last 10 years been a recent thing. From many birth doulas like Heather saying, let's start providing this same type of care for abortion work. But, you know, for as long as there have been abortions, there have been people filling this kind of role. But we're increasingly seeing a need for communities to start providing more of it because of a number of factors that have limited that amount of support.
And we'll talk about all those.
Yeah, we will. But to answer your question a little bit more about the timeline, last summer, Meg, the other person who's the co-founder with me, had organized herself and with some other folks in the community a training, an abortion doula training. I actually didn't live in Portland yet then. I moved here at the end of last year. And then Meg and I met and started talking. And out of that training, there had been a lot of interest, but there wasn't exactly there wasn't an organization to direct it into exactly at that point. And so that the conversations with Meg and I started in December, and we took quite a few months to really work on those foundational questions of what's our mission, what's our vision, what are we asking people to join, and what does it mean to join, and what kind of values guide our work. And so we spent a couple months doing that, and then brought in, we now have a collective of six as of April. People were joining April and May, and that feels like a really great number for us as a starting collective members for doing this foundational work, and we're excited to grow.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk a little bit about what is a doula and then what's an abortion doula. We've had on Bread and Roses Samantha Zapora, who is a local doula who also provides abortion care, and so she spoke a little bit about that. But go into the difference or note differences. What is a doula and abortion doula?
Absolutely. A doula is someone who provides skilled and informed supportive care, non-medical, to people having a whole variety of reproductive experiences. You know, traditionally when you hear doula, it really started as oppression in the 90s. As Ariel mentioned, we are replacing what was originally a community role. Yeah. But we're finding with things changing in the culture and in family structure and dynamics that making it a profession increases the access, which we think is very, very important to get that support. Mm-hmm. For the most part, it's more associated with birth work and postpartum work. So supporting families as they're preparing to parent during the birth process and after as they're adjusting to life with their newborn. But more recently, there's been more of a focus on what we call full spectrum doula care.
Yeah.
So again, it's this idea of a variety of reproductive experiences and a variety of pregnancy outcomes. So not just supporting people who are pregnant, planning to give birth and parent, but people who are making adoption plan, people who are choosing to end or terminate a pregnancy, and people who are having expected or unexpected pregnancy loss, stillbirth or infant loss. So I think it's really, at its foundation, the work is the same.
Yeah.
And that we are there to be a companion to people, to help them have a positive experience, mm-hmm. To help them seek out the tools that will be supportive of them moving through and incorporating this part of their story into their whole story. But of course, obviously, abortion and birth do have differences. So there are some logistical differences that we've been really lucky in Portland to have some people training coming in. And as a collective, we've been supporting each other and gathering skills so that we have specific to people who experience abortion and how we can positively affect their experience.
Mm-hmm. Great. So let's talk a little bit about who it is that you serve and who are the individuals that that would come to you. What are they looking for?
Yeah.
Ariel?
Yeah. I'll say a little bit. So we think that anyone could benefit from this, that, you know, in so many, there are also even other facets of our lives that we might benefit from having a doula-like person for, but certainly for reproductive experiences and certainly for abortion, which is so highly stigmatized and has so many other barriers as well. So we really think that anyone accessing abortion would benefit or could benefit if they wanted to have a doula with them, someone thinking about the ways that they could support them. On top of that, I think besides everyone, definitely those who are in more precarious situations are those that we want to be first and foremost there for. Those who are already struggling with the effects of poverty, those who are already struggling with the effects of white supremacy in our society, those mm-hmm. who are already struggling with the effects of gender and sexual marginalization. Mm-hmm. These are the folks for whom we really want to be very accessible because we know that those affect your life and then your different reproductive experiences that you go through. And so we really want to be available, especially to those who really don't have enough support in their life right now to have an experience that is reflective of what they want.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Did you want to add?
Yes. Really what our biggest focus is, or one of our big focuses is, we are there to support you no matter what your story is, no matter what your reasons for the choices that you're having, no matter what circumstances you're under. That's a huge foundation, is that compassionate, non-judgmental piece. And we're also, we've been very mindful in getting ready for our launch and coming out into the community to be very inclusive, mm-hmm. especially about our language. Yeah. I think it's important to note that not everybody experiencing abortion is female identified.
Yeah.
So we've been trying to be very mindful about creating open spaces so that no one reads about us or hears about us and says, that's not for me, mm-hmm. or they're not there to help me or who I am or what my story is. So.
Yeah, unfortunately, right now, the industry standard, even for those who are doing really important work, abortion providers and others who work, around abortion, at this point right now, the industry standard is still to talk about those seeking abortion as women. Mm-hmm. You know, this many women have abortion, or, talk about the women that seek abortion. And I think some groups are starting to catch on and realize not just women have abortions, and not all women are in a situation to be seeking abortions. And so we need to use language that validates and recognizes the full diversity of the reality of who is experiencing this. And so, you'll notice in our external materials and internal materials, that's how we talk. And that's, something that we hope will spread.
And for folks who might be confused, there are some people that do not identify on the gender spectrum as women, mm-hmm. Yet may be experiencing abortions.
Yeah.
So I was very thankful about this piece, the language piece, for sure. I'm curious as to how the conversation happened between you guys.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'll say for myself and for Meg, it was just sort of a given from our perspective, from our own personal different perspectives. This was important to us, but also just recognizing this already from the get-go. And I know a lot of organizations that have been around for a while are having to have these conversations and shift and change. But for us, it was the initial conversations, and so also initially on what we put out in terms of who we are and what it would mean to join CASC, I think that was very clear. Mm-hmm. And so those who were interested in joining were already on the same page, and I think we were lucky for that. And that's not always the case. We put out a lot of materials on our Facebook page about this, and we try to, we know that not everyone who would understand this already understands it. Yeah. So we want to be open to that, mm-hmm. and have that educational opportunity. But in terms of how it happened for us, it was pretty mm-hmm. much a given mm-hmm. from day one. And those who joined us were mm-hmm. on the same page. And so that made it a little bit more streamlined mm-hmm. for us in terms of incorporating that.
I also appreciate the language in the terms of also talking about partners, right? Because you can be experiencing abortion and not be the one actually undergoing the procedure, yet still needing that support. So thank you for inclusive language.
Yeah, hooray! Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about the different things that you provide for people. So there's emotional care, physical comfort, informational support, and transportation, and also other logistical support. So I would love if we can delve a little bit more into those. How do you support folks who are experiencing abortion in those different areas?
I think that one of the most important things to note is that it's not just the day of or during a procedure or during the process of a medication abortion that we're there. The second that people call in, you know, hopefully we have a little time to meet with them beforehand, sometimes not, depending mm-hmm. on the circumstance. But we're not just there for them in the moment, but really that continuity of care afterwards. So checking in a couple days afterwards, checking in a week after and a month after. We notice that there are definitely some effects of this process that can sometimes change over time, and people's need to have that same kind of listening ear, compassion, information, support can change as well. And we want to make sure we're there for the spectrum of that experience. But so in terms of those categories that you mentioned, emotional care is really just being present with people, mm-hmm. Knowing that you are there for them no matter what, that non-judgmental support, reassurance, and letting them tell whatever parts of their stories are important mm-hmm. and feel like they don't have to edit themselves in expressing whatever is happening for them in the before, during, and after of abortion care. Mm-hmm. And again, those skills are really just active listening skills. There's nothing particularly special about them, just saying, I am here for you.
Though it's hard to do.
Yes, yes, it can be hard. it can be hard on paper, but really it's that place inside everybody that mm-hmm. connects with someone and says, I'm with you, even though I can't be experiencing the exact same thing. Mm-hmm. In terms of physical comfort, again, you know, different methods of abortion or different settings of abortion come with different physiological components to them, the experience. Mm-hmm. And so we're there to provide some comfort. So whether that's a kind hand and a touch, some heat, some acupressure points, again, something to just bring tools to help them feel comfortable and really cared about and cared for, I think is a really important part mm-hmm. of what we do, both for emotional and physical support. Mm-hmm. Informational is a little bit about helping people ask questions, helping people connect to their care providers, explore their options, figure out what might be right for them, and also a bit of understanding about what to expect, what's normal. There's often a lot of questions, mm-hmm. Especially in the case of what we're seeing more, medication abortions, which part or all of the process can take place at home. Yeah. And so having someone there just mm-hmm. to kind of connect mm-hmm. them to, this may seem like an other world experience, but here's some information to ground you as to what you can expect and what's normal. And then for transportation and logistics, again, that's sometimes the barriers have nothing to do with it's getting there.
Yeah.
It's paying for it. It's how do I make it happen? And so right now, our goal is to also deal with those access barriers as well. We don't provide direct funding, but we have a lot of resources and referrals to help people who are having a challenging time paying for their abortion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Great. That's a lot. Very encompassing. You're listening to Bread and Roses. We are talking this evening with the Cascade Abortion Support Collective. We have Ariel and Heather, abortion doulas that are working with the collective. We've been talking about how they came together, the services that they provide. We're going to talk more about how they are hoping to impact the reproductive health system and culture in our society. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. We're going to listen to Tracy Chapman. This is, of course, Talking About a Revolution.
Yeah. Don't you know, talking about a revolution, it sounds like a whisper. Don't you know, you're talking about a revolution, it sounds like a whisper. While they're standing in the welfare lines, crying at the doorsteps of those armies of salvation, wasting time in the unemployment lines, sitting around waiting for a promotion. Don't you know, we're talking about a revolution, it sounds so sweet. Who are people gonna rise up, get their share? Rise up, take what's theirs. Don't you know you better run, 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 run. Oh, so you better run, 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 run.
Talking about a revolution, Tracy Chapman here on Bread and Roses. Tonight on Bread and Roses, we are talking with Ariel and Heather of the Cascades Abortion Support Collective, a brand new collective starting here in Portland, and they offer free services, which is incredible. I'd love if you can talk about why that is and how you're able to do that.
Yeah.
Ariel.
Thank you. For that question, and we're definitely excited to talk about that. So it was definitely a really intentional choice to make clear on all of our materials that our services are available for free. And we've touched on a little bit in what we've talked about thus far, that there are so many barriers, you know, from general stigma to funding concerns, to childcare, logistics, travel, all of these things that go into getting to make this choice, you know, or getting to make this decision, depending on, you know, the situation that you're in. And so we recognized that if we were to put ourselves out there as a service that was going to charge, even if it wasn't that much, that it would potentially cut people off, and it would cut off the most vulnerable, right? Mm-hmm. It would be very clearly cutting off those that didn't have that and that wouldn't call a service that they felt like they couldn't afford. And so, you know, if we work with people who have the resources and want to donate to help make our service continue for others, that's great. But it's, we make very clear that you're not paying for this service. You can have this service no matter what, because you deserve it. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, it links back to that belief, that founding belief that you and everyone else mm-hmm. deserve this support no matter what.
And this is a community service.
Exactly. Yeah. And so that was really important, that if everyone deserves it, then we can't be saying that, but you have to pay, because we know so many things in our society that way then are not accessible. Mm-hmm. And that already for many people, the actual fee for the procedure is a problem. And we're lucky we're not actively funding abortions. We're lucky to have another organization, NRO, that focuses on that. But even still, it can be difficult, even when you get, you know, some funding help. And even if you have, you know, insurance, it can still be an issue. And so that was a really key decision for us. So how we do it is that we are all volunteering our time. So all the doulas that are part of CASC, you know, do this labor for free, because they have a similar understanding that if we weren't to do it that way, it would be cutting off those who are in the most precarious situations. And the other way we do it this way is that we really need our community to help us fundraise for the bare minimum cost that we need to mm-hmm. keep ourselves running, for our materials, for our website, for our supplies. And so we have an upcoming fundraiser on August 22nd. It's our launch party and fundraiser, which we can talk more about later as mm-hmm. well. And you can also donate online on our website at cascadesabortionsupport.org/donate. And even if it's just a small amount, it's a big amount to us, because right now we're really entirely self-funded, which isn't sustainable in the long run. So we're all volunteer, but we need our community to help us raise, you know, the amount that can keep us just sort of at a base level running. And then we give our time. That's how we do it.
Mm-hmm. That's fabulous. Well, so let's talk, let's get a little bit more into, you know, kind of the background, the context as to why such a service is so important. And so part of your vision as an abortion doula collective is, quote, to contribute to creating a society that is free of shame, guilt, and stigma associated with abortion, end of quote. I'd love if you can talk about the impact that says the culture of shame is really having on those who are experiencing abortion or have experienced abortion, but also on American society at large.
Yeah, that's a great question and such a big question, right? And so much a part of why we do what we do and why we have to do what we're doing. So I think it's helpful to think about sort of the different layers and the different categories of the way that stigma plays out. And so the more obvious, like to the naked eye, let's say, aspects of this are the more like physical. So for example, one example of this is, you know, the physical people that show up outside of abortion clinics and try to either with words or with their bodies physically block and bar people from entering or enact sort of violence on them by the things that they say. And that's creating a physical barrier, and that is born out of the kind of stigma that exists and is fed on in this country and in other countries as well, but especially here. And so that's one example, and there are others, but that's one sort of, it's very physical, you know, and it's very concrete and obvious. And then there are others that are more in sort of the mental and emotional level. I mean, sometimes those are harder to point at or harder to call out, but they're deeply destructive and pervasive. And so it can affect, you know, even your own internal reasoning and your own internal healing, the amount of ridiculing and criticizing and that exists because of the stigma in our society for reproductive decisions, but especially for abortion. And that's really harmful. So much so that we end up in this situation where there frequently people feel like they have to justify their decision and fit a mold of like this perfect victim or this, you know, this, you have to have, it has to have been bad enough, your situation, or has to have been, you know, had a number of these different characteristics. And even organizations that are trying to support and keep abortion access available, which is, you know, a hard fight to fight, sometimes play into this in destructive ways of talking about, well, these people really need it, as if your story isn't, you know, pull at the heartstrings enough, then you don't deserve this care. And again, this comes back to our belief that, no, you deserve it no matter what. You deserve to have access to this health care. You deserve to have it with respect and with dignity and with affirmation and feel all the feelings that come with it, because sometimes it doesn't feel good. Sometimes there's negative feelings that even when you're making this choice, but either way, you deserve support. So those are some of the ways. And then the other thing I'll mention is sort of policy and legislative angle that feeds out of the stigma that we see. And we are lucky in Oregon in some ways. You know, it's not that it's so easy, but definitely this state is the only state actually that has not passed any new laws or policies restricting abortion access since Roe v. Wade. And again, that doesn't mean there aren't barriers, but they haven't added new ones, and other states have gone to great lengths to add just increasingly ridiculous restrictions, you know, from waiting periods to government-enforced manipulative documents and scripts that doctors are forced to say, and, you know, the list goes on and on, and we should be very alarmed by those realities.
Closing clinics,
yeah, that's a really big one. Yeah. You know, it doesn't matter if you have a waiting period if you don't even have a clinic. So, good point.
And sometimes it's not what we see, but also what we don't see is that, you know, we know that 1 in 3 American women, unfortunately, don't have statistics for people who are non-female identified with abortion, but 1 in 3 American women experience abortion during their lifetime. And I can tell you, and I know that Ariel and the other collective members are the same, you know, we are clearly supportive of reproductive justice. Mm-hmm. And the people in our lives know that. And I certainly don't hear stories from 1 in 3 people. And there's something that holds people back from feeling like there is value in sharing their stories, mm-hmm. or their stories themselves inherently have value. And one of the reasons that we wanted to provide support is that it's hard to find support sometimes. It's hard to reach out and be vulnerable and say, I'm coming to you with something I know is not 100% popular, and I'm trusting you to respond in a way that helps me and doesn't hurt me or hinder me. And unfortunately, a lot of that stigma is internalized. So sometimes we see people who, because of all this shame and stigma, feel like I don't deserve to have support or tools that help me have a more positive experience. Like I deserve to have whatever is part of the experience without trying to elevate that experience in a positive way. So that's why we want to do this. So people know when they call us, they're going to get support, and we're going to encourage the script inside their head that you do deserve what this support. Mm-hmm. That we're not just doing it to pass time. We're doing it because we really believe in you and believe that this is something that you need and deserve.
And I think also that it will ripple beyond the one person that we're with that mm-hmm. day. Let's say, you know, someone having this support and having someone, give them the dignity and the respect to say you deserve support and your experiences are valid and, you know, they might be hard and messy, but they're real. Mm-hmm. You know, that then affects how that person's going to be able to interact with their family and with their wider community and how they're going to mm-hmm. feel about themselves. That's at mm-hmm. least what we hope. Mm-hmm. And I know that we've experienced it in our own ways. Just the moments you have support for something and those that you don't, the different ways that that impacts your life.
Mm-hmm. I'm originally from France, where the public dialogue around abortion is very, very different. It's mm-hmm. not at all framed as a moral issue. It's absolutely framed as a decision, a personal decision from, you know, the person, being pregnant. And also, I think that there is an acknowledgement that this is just part of reproductive, you know, mechanisms, right? Mm-hmm. Sometimes, you know, things happen, right? And it's just a normal, complete part of life to actually, you know, have to come to a decision like this.
Yeah, and that's so true. And I think this stigma also tries to keep that knowledge from mm-hmm. us, that actually 60%, over 60% of those accessing abortion, at least in the U.S., are already parents. And a lot of times there's this idea put out there that, oh, this is, you know, people in this situation mm-hmm. that don't, you know, that have done this thing wrong and they don't care about children, or whatever kind of ideas are put out there. Like this, you know, a lot of those same folks experiencing pregnancy and birth are the same folks who have an abortion, either before mm-hmm. or after. And so, yeah, I'm glad you brought that up.
Yeah, that's part of it. And so let's talk a little bit about Portland here. What's the climate here? And how do folks access those services around here in Portland?
Yeah. Well, as Ariel talked in a little bit ago, you know, for a couple of ways where we have a huge leg up. So in the Portland area, we have multiple providers that provide abortion services, both in clinic and medication abortions, which sometimes take combination in clinic or home or one or the other. We also have providers who provide later abortion services into the third trimester, which is very important. We have organizations like ourselves. We have funding organizations. We have Backline, which we'll talk about in a little bit, which is a really incredible resource. But even still, even in a very liberal city, even a city that's particularly secular, a city that's, you know, has a higher awareness of social justice, mm-hmm. even here it can be difficult, because, like we were talking about with the stigma, that's always there, and logistical challenges are always there. So even if you can afford an abortion, even if you have support for an abortion, even if you had a way to get there, there's protesters outside, mm-hmm. or you have to deal with childcare, mm-hmm. or you have to deal with how to take care of yourself in a world where maybe you can't tell everyone around you that this is part of your experience. So we are very lucky, but we also have a long way to go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very much so.
Yeah.
Great. All right. Well, let's take a quick musical break. When we come back, we'll talk about the launch party and some other ways that folks can connect with you, including if some doulas are interested and some folks are interested in volunteering, etc. You're listening to Bread and Roses. I'm Delphine Crescenzo. This evening, we've been so blessed to be joined by Ariel and Heather, and they are part of a brand new collective, Reproductive Justice Collective, Abortion Doulas, Cascades Abortion Support Collective. And this is, you know, they're launching this thing. This is such an honor to have them on Bread and Roses as their first public message goes out to you. This is free services, pretty incredible. Their website is cascadesabortionsupport.org. We are going to go to a song that really, it's called The Body Electric by Hooray for the Riff Raff. And it's a song that talks about gender-based violence. And it can be a little heavy when I first heard it. So I just wanted to preface this with this. The Body Electric. We'll be right back.
Said you're gonna shoot me down, put my body in the river. Shoot me down, put my body in the river while the whole world sings. Sing it like a song, the whole world sings like there's nothing going wrong. He shot her down, he put her body in the river. He covered her up, but I went to get her and I said, my girl, what happened to you now? I said, my girl, we gotta stop it somehow. Sick and sad. Tell me what's a man with a rifle in his hand gonna do for a world that's all gone mad? He's gonna shoot me down, put my body in the river, cover me up with the leaves of September like an old sad song. You heard it all before. We'll deal gone, but I'm settling the score.
You're listening to Bread and Roses. I'm Delphine Crescenzo. This was The Body Electric by Hooray for the Riff Raff. I'm very thankful that we're having this conversation. We've also been having some off-air conversation. I've been sharing some of my personal experiences, being able to compare a little bit of what's happening in the U.S. and in France. And I really am very encouraged by what you are doing. And yet, we were asking the question, why are your services needed? Right. We really hope that things can move forward. And so with that, I'd love if you can talk a little bit about some of the things that you really want folks to know about abortion, about making safe and healthy sexual and reproductive decisions.
Absolutely. So I love that question, by the way. Thank you so much for bringing up that broader topic, which is really foundational to the work that we're doing. So what we strongly believe as a collective is that there is no one-size-fits-all to reproductive experiences. Mm-hmm. There is no quote-unquote right decision or right way to move forward. When making such pivotal decisions about your sexual life, your reproductive life, your family life. And I think what we'd love to impart, not only here today, but in the work that we do, is that, you know, when people judge your choice, they are judging it based on a tiny fraction of what they know about you. Mm-hmm. It's what they can observe, and it's what you've shared with them. And there is so much more to your story. And, you know, we trust that, I mean, these are big decisions. Something that we want to make sure we touch on is that not everyone has complex decisions on abortions. Not everyone struggles. For some people, it is a very clear decision, very simplistic, that they feel very confident about. That being said, these are always big decisions because choosing one way or another has a huge impact on your life. Mm-hmm. So we really encourage people to figure out what's right for them and to reach out to the support they need to do that. So whether that's sitting with someone who can be a companion and a listening ear, whether that's doing research, whether that's doing soul searching, talking to people in your community, talking to healthcare providers. We want people to have the tools to decide what's right for them, because I can't decide what's right for anybody else. All I can do is trust them in this process. Mm-hmm. And then not only to seek support in deciding, but seek support in that decision playing out and the effects on your life. And, you know, we're talking about abortion, but I think that can play through to anything that you do with your body that involves sex and reproduction and family.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think the other thing that we want to see recognized, and I think the sort of momentum to make abortion doula work happen has been focusing on this, and Heather mentioned it earlier, is, you know, a recognition and respect for mm-hmm. this being part of a full spectrum mm-hmm. of reproductive experiences, and that, you know, we were just talking about it off air, right? It's the same people that have pregnancies that, you know, they carry to term and parent, or that they do an adoption plan, or that they have an abortion. These are the same people at different points in their life. And so Heather mentioned it earlier, one group we wanted to highlight, and that we will definitely and do use as a resource and a referral source, is Backline, which is an organization that I'm actually also a part of. I'm an advocate with, and the other co-founder of CASC is also a Backline advocate. And it's an organization that, you know, has in many ways its home here in Portland, though is now based in Oakland. But Backline is provides a talk line for you to speak about any pregnancy related experience before, during, or after. So there's such a great resource that if we get people who contact us, you know, our focus is on abortion support, because that's where we saw the gap and we saw the need. But that being said, it's part of a full spectrum. And so if people come to us and they haven't really made their decision yet, or they want to speak about a different experience, you know, Backline is going to be our go-to referral. And we just want to mention it on air as well. And folks can find them at yourbackline.org. But they're such a great place that you can call and talk about mm-hmm. anything related to pregnancy, before, during, and after. Many of the skills that Backline taught myself and taught our other co-founder play out in CASC as well.
Mm-hmm. And truly before, during, and after. I mean, people can call in years or decades after and wanting to talk about an experience with pregnancy and abortion, miscarriage, parenting, kind of even infertility and conception, things like that. So it's a fantastic resource. So please spread the word on that as well as CASC.
Yeah, as much as we are going to be providing aftercare, you know, specifically check-ins up until a month, and we'll be obviously available as a resource as time goes on. You know, it's so important because these experiences stay with us. They live in our mind. They live in our bodies, and they can come up, like feelings, emotional and physical, can come up at times maybe we don't even expect it, and it can be years and years later. Mm-hmm. So Backline's a great resource, and we soon, you know, starting our resource for those, at least as it relates to abortion.
Mm-hmm. This is also where the moral argument around abortion is very difficult for me, is because it kind of puts the conversation as either this is right or this is wrong. I think, as you just mentioned, this is an experience that will stay with you again and again, that will live in your mind, that will live in your body. And so this is where, you know, the judging it becomes very difficult for folks because there is not that understanding that this is a hard, very difficult decision
for some. Yeah, and I think that's why we say and this deserves, you deserve to have the support mm-hmm. if you want this to be, feel positive in yeah. some way. It can still feel hard or feel like a mm-hmm. loss, but you deserve to have the support. And, you know, that is one thing that sort of folks who are trying to attack abortion access and reproductive justice say that, oh, you know, if you have an abortion, you're going to be so depressed. And there was a recent study put out that showed that actually, I think it was like 90 or 95% of folks don't experience mm-hmm. it in that way. It's not to say that there aren't complex feelings and that, you know, some may feel that way or some might feel lost, but they also feel like it was the decision that mm-hmm. they wanted to make and that it was the right decision for them given all of the factors in their lives. And so I think that's important to recycognize too, that we're saying is that this deserves to be positive or at least affirmed mm-hmm. if you want it to be, and everyone should have access to that, and yeah. that will change, that will affect the future.
And we want to be a part of people's toolkits. Mm-hmm. Not everyone might want or need our services, yeah. but we want it there because whatever fit is right for you to help you have a good experience, we want to be part of that option. And again, as Ariel mentioned, we're filling a gap that we really don't see filled anywhere else in our local community. Mm-hmm. There are so many fantastic groups that are helping people with reproductive justice, but we didn't see that boots on the ground, in person, one-on-one right there. And mm-hmm. we think that's an important part of the lowering the stigma, helping people have good experiences, and also helping people feel less isolated. Mm-hmm. It can be such an isolating experience, especially as I mentioned earlier, people don't share these stories very often. So just having someone who is not only saying with their words, but with their physical presence, like mm-hmm. you are not alone.
Mm-hmm. And you care. So you started talking a little bit about some of the things that maybe you are hoping to impact. What are some, you know, maybe on the big scale and also on the more grassroots scale, what are some of the things that you hope the collective achieves?
Yeah. So, you know, we're very new. Like we said, this is our first opportunity really on a radio show and to outwardly talk about ourselves besides on our own Facebook and website. So in many ways, we've really been focusing on the roots for right now, focusing on the foundation and on putting our roots in the ground and what are our guiding values, and making our, you know, initial materials and creating our launch party and fundraiser that's coming up in August. But so I would say we don't have a complete answer to where do we want to grow. We don't have that all formalized, but certainly all of us have our own ideas and visions. And I think one I'll just touch on that we haven't gotten a chance to talk too much about thus far is, like, we want to think about providing, like Heather said, this boots on the ground in-person support here in Portland, because that's where we are and where we saw the need, but also thinking about outside of this Portland bubble. And so one, you know, dream I have is maybe in a year or two, you know, we're training other groups to become abortion doulas in Ashland and in Bend, you know, to service those areas, not just folks who are traveling here, but folks who are having their procedures there and who are in the community there and could provide the support. So that's just one example and one idea of a way that we could grow. And it's exciting for me too to think about when we bring in a few, you know, more doulas, we'll have even more ideas and even more diversity mm-hmm. of experience to guide us.
That's great. So let's talk a little bit about the launch party. Again, cascadesabortionsupport.org is the website, and you can find lots of information and get in contact with you guys there. But then there is the party where folks can get to meet you guys.
Yeah, and it's going to be a really good time, like a family-friendly event, again, in keeping with this recognition that, you know, there's crossover there. It's going to be in a lovely backyard of one of our members in Portland, and we're going to have food and drinks and music and crafts, where we're actually going to have our community that attends help us decorate cards that we're going to be giving out to those that we support, that, you know, the doula might write on the back a little message or a resource information or something, but on the front side will be an image that we're going to have available to decorate. So the community that comes will be able to be involved in the work in that way. And there'll also be a lot of raffle items, which we're finalizing and we'll be putting up on our website soon, and just the building of community around saying that this this experience deserves support. So we really hope lots of folks will attend. It's going to be Saturday, August 22nd, which is in just over 3 weeks, from noon to 4 p.m. You can come anytime, spend the whole time with us, or drop by. And it's going to be, I think it's going to be a lot of fun and a really enjoyable afternoon. So please, please come. And if you can't make it, you can still help us by, you know, liking us on Facebook, connecting with us that way, where it's facebook.com/caskdoulas. CASC. And we're also on Twitter, the same, Cask Doulas. And you can also donate to us, you know, on our website for our launch fund, because we need to raise enough money to really keep our operating costs covered.
Mm-hmm. And we're really hoping that people will come and donate to help make our group sustainable, but all are welcome.
Yes.
You know, if you want to come with your enthusiasm, pick up some of our promotional materials to spread the word as well, that is also much appreciated.
Yeah, in keeping with why we offer free support, we also wouldn't want to have an event that has a barrier to attendance. Mm-hmm. Anyone can come, whether or not financially is a way that you can contribute, but we would appreciate that for those who can.
Even a dollar, mm-hmm. even $5, it really makes a difference.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for us.
It does. We know that very well at KVU here. every dollar counts. And so how about doulas? How about if there are folks listening right now and that are like, wow, I'm a doula as well. I would love to be able to join the collective. What would be steps?
So the first step I would say is just to go on our website, check us out, like us on Facebook, just get a better sense of who we are as a collective. We are always looking for people to contribute. Sometimes that's in the direct abortion support role. And just to mention that you do not have to have any experience being a doula in any capacity. Mm-hmm. As Ariel mentioned earlier, part of our mission is going to be to do trainings. So if you're passionate about this, if you want to be involved, if you want to provide abortion support services, but you don't have any experience or any information, part of us is to create that as well, both for people in our group, local people, and as Ariel said, hopefully expanding the reach as well. But emailing us, sending us a message on Facebook, just letting us know you're enthusiastic coming to the launch party. And again, right now we're focused on this foundational building and creating some buzz, outreach, and fundraising. But again, we're hoping that that all works. And that people will be calling us. And what's really important for us is that we have enough people volunteering or offering services so that we can continue. Because mm-hmm. it would be, I think it would be very difficult to get the word out and to offer the service and not to have enough people to really make it work where we don't ever have to say no to somebody. So if you're mm-hmm. interested, please, please, please be in contact with us.
Yeah. Our email address is contact@cascadesabortionsupport.org. And so right now we're not bringing in new doula members right at this moment, but in the fall we will, and we will have a training as a part of that offered to learn these skills so that, you know, even if you are already a doula, but if you're not, this will be a way to learn how to apply these skills to abortion. So that will be upcoming, but there are also other ways to be involved besides being, you know, a collective member doula. And so you can find those all on our website, but we would love some help for our upcoming launch party. Some event volunteers for setup and cleanup and food help. We also, you know, for our transportation services that we provide, we're looking for other people who would like to do that on a volunteer basis. We'd have a training, of course, because it takes some practice on how to hold that kind of space for someone who's, you know, going to or coming from a procedure. And there are a number of others. So please, if you're interested at all, there's ways to be involved to check out the list on our website. And one other that I don't want to forget to mention is we would love some fundraising support. Those who have fundraising skills or grant writing skills, this is something we're going to be starting to look at in the fall months. And we would love anyone that has experience in that to reach out to us and offer your help. We would gladly take it.
This is great. It looks like there are so many ways that folks can really plug in. Really, this has been incredible having you here and hearing how much thought you have put into what you are presenting to our community today. Thank you for offering this service, this support, so needed. Thank you for being so thoughtful about language and being inclusive. I'd love, as you know, we wrap up your thoughts about just collective. collectives. I think, you know, we've mentioned you guys are a collective. We are a collective of women identified. And in this has been the space on Bread and Roses has been around for women for years and years, actually, 30 years. It's been kind of incredible passing it on. So I'd love to hear as we wrap up your thoughts about you guys starting a collective.
Heather. Yeah, I mentioned it a little bit in the beginning, but I think this work has to be deeply sustainable. And, you know, we talk a lot about logistics, but it really has to be sustainable on a personal level. And I cannot imagine in any of my birth doula work, whether it's families in the birth process or with new children or who are ending a pregnancy, I cannot imagine doing it alone. Just like I hope they never have to do it alone, I can't express how appreciative I am that I don't have to do it alone either, and that I can gather strength and information and skills from these incredible people around me so that not only can I do the work I'm passionate about, but I can do it well in a way that really honors how much people deserve this support.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think the other piece to forming ourselves that way is, you know, as it relates to this isn't sort of a top-down internal structure, and it isn't also a top-down, this isn't a charity. Yeah. This is a peer service in many ways. Like, yes, we are skilled and have gone through trainings and do a lot of thinking about this, but this is about offering the kind of support that we would want and that we want our friends to have access to. So it's a collective because it's not some official thing from above giving to the poor. You know, it's giving to ourselves and to our community.
Well, thank you both for the work you do and for being with us tonight.
Thank you so much for this opportunity.
Such an honor. Really.
And so you can learn more about the Cascade Abortion Support Collective by visiting cascadesabortionsupport.org. Of course, like Bread and Roses on Facebook. We are also on Twitter at Bread Roses Radio, and our email is breadandrosescollective@gmail.com. Of course, on the KBOO website, you can please share the link of the podcast of the show with any folks you think might be interested. Well, and dear listeners, next week, be ready for another edition of Mary Postlethwaite's Kitchen Table Conversations with the Bread and Roses Collective, an opportunity to learn more about us, the Bread and Roses Collective members, individually. And next Friday, Mary Postlethwaite is going to share her incredible journey with us from despair to activism. If you know any young person, any teenager experiencing severe depression right now, please listen for them and or invite them to tune in with you as Mary will share with us how she overcame her childhood anguish to blossom into a change maker. Have a great week, everyone, and I'm going to leave you with Rebel Girl, Bikini Kill.